The second night, there was neither a prison cell nor Al-Halaj there, because God was present. The nothingness was there. Non-being was there. And the third night, he was there because he came to fulfill his destiny. This has to do with what Andrew said this morning, the final test is to come back. The final test is to come back and to suffer for his sake. There's actually a very moving story about Al-Halaj on the way to his execution, because he was in a state of meditation. He was being taken to his execution and people were throwing stones at him. But he didn't feel anything because he was in a deep state of meditation. And you can go into meditation when you're no longer in the physical body. And what anybody does to the physical body, you don't feel. There is actually a very nice story about... Oh, I won't tell that. Anyway, I go on with this story, otherwise I get lost. And Al-Halaj was being taken to his execution and everybody was throwing stones at him, but he didn't feel anything. And his teacher, Shibli, was standing by the roadside. And Shibli threw a rose. And when the rose touched him, Al-Halaj came back. And he looked at Shibli with these eyes of bewilderment. And he said, "Why did you do that? Now I have to come back and suffer everything in the physical body." But that, as Andrew explained, is the final sacrifice. We are here for his sake. Here, in this world of manifestation, with all its cruelty, with all its craziness, with all its beauty, bewilderment, pettiness, we are here for his sake. And the mark of a really great mystic is they go through all the levels of reality and come back. And they have access, while in the physical body, to all the different levels of reality, and they can go anywhere at will, wherever they are needed, whatever plane of reality they are needed on. This is an ancient part of the Sufi training. This is how the sheikhs of old trained their disciples, because we are trained to work on different levels of reality. Mrs. Tweedy used to say we are soldiers of the two worlds, of the inner world and the outer world. But there are other levels of reality. And also to bring them together. It is time to bring things together. Just as we are together here on a horizontal plane, on a physical plane, we have come from different places. Some people from Europe, some people from California, some people from Atlanta, from New York. We have come together. There is a great meaning when people come together for his sake. And it also has to do with a certain activation of the other levels of reality. This is this simple saying of Christ, when two or three are gathered together for my sake, there I am also. It doesn't mean Christ is present in the physical body. It means the other dimension of the inner Christ, of the self, of the truth, is present. A certain energy is given when people come together. This is part of the inner esoteric law. When we come together for his sake, for the sake of the work that needs to be done, because we are needed. Not just isolated. That is why I spoke in the last conference at length about the friends of God. If you are interested, there is a tape of that talk somewhere. But the reason I gave it is important to know that we are working together. Even if we don't know who they are, they know who we are. They look after us. That is their duty. And they give us what we need, but it's helpful to ask. In our tradition, we are told the sheikh always finally knows what we need, but if we ask, he knows it more quickly. It is a cooperative venture. We need to cooperate together on the physical plane, on the horizontal plane, but also on the vertical plane, on the different levels of reality. Because we can't do this work alone. We need the angels to help us. We need the friends of God to help us. And we need to know they are there waiting to be asked. You see, there is a spiritual law that you are allowed to say no. Then they respect. Nothing is ever imposed spiritually. It can't be, because this has to do with free will, which is part of his gift to humanity. He gave us this extraordinary gift of divine consciousness, which at its highest level gives us the ability to have direct access to truth, to God, to what is real. And it was also given with free will. We can use it as we want to use it. We are allowed to say yes, and we are allowed to say no. And the great ones have tremendous respect for free will because it is the stamp of God. They cannot impose themselves upon us. They help where they are allowed to help. But if we ask, if we say yes, I need your help. Not just for my personal self, but I want to participate in the unfolding of love in the world. Because love is being unfolded into the world in a way it has never been unfolded before. A certain energy is being made accessible in a way that has never been accessible before. It is being given freely. There is never any charge for this. If anybody ever charges you money for anything spiritual, it's a waste of time. Don't go there. Because, why? Because it is the grace of God, and the grace of God is given freely. The secrets of the universe are not for sale. They are free because He, the Beloved, is total and absolute freedom. We have even forgotten that. We have even forgotten that we are free. We identify ourselves with our problems. We are the master of problems and problem solving. We have created a whole industry of problem solvers, management consultants and therapists and workshops and that are about ourselves and our problems. Yes, it can be helpful for a while. The great Sufi Junaid, he said, the first step is remember your faults. But then he said, the second step is to forget your faults. We have other things to do, friends. And there is a clock ticking somewhere. If certain things are not done in the next few years, they won't be able to be done. Human beings are made in the image of God. If you ever see a human being as they really are, it is unbelievable. I was only shown that once. I have never forgotten it, when I saw this line of school children walking past the entrance to a park. I was half crazy at the time, but somebody, through his grace, showed me what they were. And where the heart is for each child, there was this blazing sun, so luminous, so dynamic, so beautiful. And they were just ordinary school children going with their teacher to the park, in a line along the street. I just saw it for a moment. You can't see those things for too long because it fries the brain. I was quite crazy anyway. We are so beautiful, we are made of light, we are children of light caught in a world of darkness. And the darkness is beautiful too if we know how to look at it. But we need to reclaim our mystical heritage. Because there is work to be done together as mystics, as lovers of God. And this is what mystics have always done. A brotherhood of migrants who keep watch on the world and for the world. We are here for his sake, not for ours. Yes, we have certain duties to do, families to raise, jobs to go to. pain to suffer, joy to experience. But there is something so much greater to take part in on all different levels. And to know we are being helped, that there is this web of light and love that is being woven and we are weaving together. The moment you look towards God in your heart, a certain light awakens somewhere on a different plane. And a spiritual group is very powerful on the inner planes. It is a point of light that helps the whole environment, that heals the whole environment, that attracts grace where it is needed. But it is time to reclaim our mystical heritage, what has always belonged to us, but somehow our focus on the physical plane has been at the cost of these other levels. And traditionally, Sufis have worked together on many different levels. Sometimes in this world, helping on a physical plane or on a mental plane, but also inwardly. Helping to make the world come alive with the names of God. It is a beautiful work to do. It is tiring, it is exhausting, it is demanding, it drives you crazy. But you know you are part of an unfolding of love that has been waiting for centuries to take place. And as I say, many of us have chosen to come at this particular time and place to be part of it. This caravan of lovers, a caravanserai of souls that has been traveling for centuries through the desert of the world. And we are needed. He needs us. He asks us to help him in his work. And for the Sufis, that means to bring love into the world, to work with the currents of love in our own hearts, in our own lives, to weave this web of love so that grace can flow where it is needed, to make a network of lovers on the outer plane and on the inner plane. You see, while I have been giving this talk, what I have actually been doing is weaving all of your hearts together. Unless you said no. Seriously. You take a thread of love and you weave it from heart to heart. And I give you interesting talk to keep your attention. Never trust a Sufi. Never trust a Sufi. They talk about one thing and do something else. They are mischief makers, Sufis. I always tell this one story of Nasruddin because people have heard it, have listened to me, heard it many times, but it's the only one I remember properly. And that was about Nasruddin, who used to cross the border with his donkeys. Again and again he would cross the border. And the border guards knew he was smuggling something. And they would search the panniers of the donkeys time and time again, and they didn't find anything. And Nasruddin with his donkeys went back and forth. Anyway, 20 years later, Nasruddin was in a different part of the country, in a village inn in the evening, and he met one of the border guards who had retired and got back to his village. And the border guard said, "Look, you know, I have retired now. So tell me, what was going on? We knew you were smuggling something. We never found what it was. What was it?" And Nasruddin said, "I was smuggling donkeys." So friends, we have a break for 10 minutes and then time for questions or whatever you like. Yeah? Anything anybody didn't understand? Yes. You got a microphone.
Thinking about what Andrew had to say and your remarks last night and tonight, it feels to me like we don't really have time to do all the work we have to do individually to go through the 4 or 5 or 6 stages, however many stages there are.
Very interesting question, yes. Certain things have changed, and it kind of took me by surprise because I am by nature a spiritual traditionalist. You know, you do your 20 years of basic work, and then maybe after then, you know, you can participate in something. And as far as I was known, a couple of years ago, that all changed. The instructions changed, and it doesn't work like that anymore. You're needed wherever you are, and this actually has to do with oneness, because as far as I understand from my limited perception, the quality of consciousness that is being given to humanity is a consciousness of oneness. And in oneness, everything is present at each moment in time. And there is no longer any linear journey to make. And you can participate completely from where you are at each moment in time. The journey still continues. The stages, the stations that Andrew outlined that you go through, this is the soul's journey home. This is the whole mystical journey of purification. This is from the alone to the alone. And each in our own way, we still will walk this journey. And yet, we are needed from where we are to participate in this unfolding of oneness. And when I say oneness, it is, of course, love, because love is oneness. People don't realize that love has a consciousness. We have very little understanding in the West of love. We think love as an emotion. I always quote this poem of Rumi when he says, different degrees of domination and servitude are what you know as love. But love is different. It arrives complete just there like the moon at the window. Seek only that of which you have no clue. Desire only that of which you have no hope. This is not the Oxus River or some little creek. This is the shoreless sea. Here swimming ends always in drowning. But it is this completeness. Love is complete. It is not an emotion. It is, and for the Sufis, it has a consciousness. Sufis have always worked with the consciousness of love, and the consciousness of love is the consciousness of oneness, in which everything is included. That's why I personally feel that mystics who work with love, who work with oneness, have a vital ecological contribution to make, because in the consciousness of oneness, everything is included. From the leaf of every tree, to every skyscraper, to every drunk in the back alley, because it is one, because it is his oneness. And there is a saying about this: heaven and earth cannot contain me, but the heart of my devoted servant can. And if everything is one, then we have what we need, because in oneness everything is given. But we need to work with this oneness. We need to learn a different way of working in the world, in ourselves. And that's actually the title of my next book for next year, Working with Oneness, A Practical Mystical Guide. Although a friend of mine said it's not very practical. Yeah. Thank you, very important question. I don't know if I answered it, but I tried. Yeah, please, at the front here. It's okay, he'll find you. He's young and agile. The front row. Right, he's coming from there. And what is very interesting is that although time is present, there is no time. So there is time for everything. Everything can happen in its right time. We just have to be there. Yeah.
You mentioned that we can find some of this information on the internet, and I did? Yes, you said on the web.
Oh, I was talking about this. Was I talking about the internet?
Well, you're talking about the dimensions, and I am impressed.
Oh, I see. Oh, yes, right. Yeah, yeah, because we have website. Yeah. We have, you know.
And I was impressed with some things that came through from Hawaii that talked about the fourth dimension happening in May.
The fourth dimension happens in May.
That. I'm sure other people have gotten it also, but it talked about the fact that the hierarchy wanted to work with humans in a better way, and that
I agree with, and that I have been told also.
Well,
yes.
I'm sure that you have something to say about it, but
but the what would you like me to say about it?
I'm open to suggestions. It didn't seem sensible to me to think that anybody was going to be separated because they could understand or were promoted to the fourth dimension.
What? I don't understand that at all.
The consciousness of the fourth dimension, whatever that means.
I don't know either.
Okay. Well,
sounds good.
You've said it then.
Sounds good. What? I said it. I said fourth dimension. I don't know. I'm a little confused. Maybe somebody, yes. You got a microphone. This is the technological age.
What can we do as individuals with the current awareness that we have now, right now, to actively participate as much as we can where we're needed? Besides lining up the intention within all our higher levels for that.
A friend of mine has a company called LGA Associates. You know what it stands for? Love God always. Love him. You see, we have forgotten the power of love. We are so caught up in doing. We are a culture of doers. We have forgotten the power of love. Do you know how powerful a human being is if they offer themselves to God in love? Then they are used. I try to explain. Most people who try to do things themselves, they have good intentions, and those intentions cause disasters because they ricochet off things. They come through the ego, they ricochet off. And I always give... For me, the greatest example was when the World Bank decided to help people in the Amazon basin, and they gave money for a road to be built across the Amazon. And it caused so much suffering, right? And it came from such good intentions to help these poor, impoverished people. But if we love God, and we really love God, and we say to the beloved, use me as you know how to use me. I don't know anything. I am an idiot. I don't know anything. You use me. He knows how to use us. And we do it through love, because love is so powerful. Love can untangle things that otherwise get knotted. And love goes where it is needed, individually, collectively. Love purifies, love transforms, love opens doors that otherwise are. You know, we have forgotten how to work with grace. We have forgotten how to work with magic. We have forgotten so many things. So many doors have been closed to us. And we are left alone, stranded in this desolate world that is hungry for love. So say to your heart, say to the beloved, I love you. I remember you. Do with me as thou willst. I am your servant. Then you can be used. Not on your terms. Not in this fragmented sense we have of ourselves. That is why, to me, this energy of love and oneness is so important. Because if you work from oneness, you go where you are needed. You don't create more discord. You know, this saying, no good deed goes unpunished. So often you try to help and you make a mess. It's one of my problems. I always try to help people. Usually causes disaster.
So it's a matter of surrender.
For the Sufi, it's always a matter of surrender, my dear. The easiest thing when it is done, the most difficult thing while you are doing it. just a matter of surrender.
Thank you.
Yeah, somebody behind you.
What has helped you the most on your path?
My relationship with my sheikh. It's the only thing I trust. When he sent me to America when I was 36, I just had one image, which was a cup on which was inscribed, "The help of the guru, your guru is in your heart, that is all you need to know." I have had two things in this life which have really helped me: my own desire for truth and my connection with my sheikh. Yeah? That's all I've ever had. Thank you. And that this is a living connection. Again, this is something people have forgotten. They think you have to have a teacher who's present in the physical body. It is helpful, yes. But a really good connection, it lives after the teacher has died. The teacher is still present. In the Sufi tradition, those who have died, who have left their physical body, are still present, helping us. And I couldn't do the work I have to do without a connection. I have to ask, always. And it is living connection. He is the boss. Yes, somebody else. Over there.
Hi.
Hi.
If we are intrinsically one.
Sorry, can you?
If we are intrinsically one.
Yeah.
Then what is separating us?
Is separating us. From which level would you like the answer? From the level of oneness,
any level that I may understand.
From the level of oneness, nothing is separating us. We are one. From the level of the ego, we claim our own individuality. And this is part of the mystery of incarnation. We claim our individuality. Children, young babies are still one. They still look with the eyes of wonder. And for them, the world is a place of revelation. And then, as we grow up, as the ego constellates, we claim our ego, and then comes this extraordinary moment when he looks into our hearts. And then the journey home begins, and then we give our ego back. And then we reconnect with our own oneness. And I think, I may be wrong, that there will be children in the future who make the journey without ever losing their conscious connection to oneness. It is just my personal feeling that there doesn't have to be this desert of separation in the future. We have had to walk through it. I spent 19 years of my life, or 16 years of my life, without even knowing there were other levels of reality, without even knowing there was spiritual consciousness. It was so desolate, it was so empty. And then somebody awoke me and showed me what I had missed. But it is the ego, it is the I. I am different from you. We are not different. We are reflections of the same oneness that are each unique in our manifestation, that each offer back to his oneness a unique expression of that oneness. Like a great artist never paints two pictures the same. Everything that is manifest reflects his oneness in a different way. It is quite beautiful when you see it like that. That is when this world becomes a place of revelation. That is when we begin to see his face wheresoever we turn. Always different, always one. But, yeah, for many of us it is the pain of separation. This is, of course, for the Sufi, the longing. This is the reed crying in the reed bed, torn from the reed bed. You know, Rumi's greatest poem, the Mathnawi, begins with this image of the cry of the reed torn from the reed bed. This is the lament of the soul, the longing, the eternal cry of separation, the homesickness of the soul. I could speak for hours about it, but yeah. The front, somebody here at the front. Here, Ben.
Yeah.
The lady in the front.
You said something about perhaps in the future children wouldn't lose they're innocent or being in the childlike play state.
Yeah.
I want to say perhaps for some of us there's a still time that we can be in that state while we are here.
Oh yeah, this is mystical life.
And
consciously. You realize the oneness you have with all of life.
And perhaps for me, children, they have been the best example having full, complete mystical experiences.
Yeah.
I would like to see myself and people who are in the path actually playing, being children again. Before
dangerous game.
Yes, absolutely.
You can't go back.
Who said no?
You can't go back, my dear.
We don't go back. No. We just claim that innocent, playful child again. That's my personal opinion.
That's your opinion. That's fine. You had a question?
What drew me to the Sufi path were the writings of Rumi and this longing that wouldn't go away. And I was drawn to this conference because it said lover and beloved. And does it ever merge? Or is the longing always there? And doesn't it ever get consummated? Is there always this this yearning to dissolve, but it doesn't seem to ever quite work? I feel like I'm always. You take one step and it recedes or it pulls away. I don't know. I'm feeling this frustration of. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh. Somebody said there. You know, there is. Sounds True produced this set of tapes of mine. Love is a fire. I am wood, and they said, you know, you have to listen to the first 8 tapes of all of this suffering and longing, and then finally in the last tape you get a really nice experience. You know? But you have to listen through all those first tapes. It does, yeah. There is... Experiences of union are quite tremendous, quite ecstatic, and they get deeper and deeper and more intense, and they change and they go on. And sometimes the longing comes back and then the longing is dissolved. And...
Just a dance. It is
a tremendous journey. It is a tremendous undertaking, and the longing is what is real. That is why Rumi said, "Don't look for water, be thirsty." The longing takes you home. I think Meister Eckhart, he said, "God is the sigh in the soul." Mm-hmm. God is the sigh in the soul. There is this wonderful, ancient, I think even pre-Islamic cry, "Yali, Yali," which is the cry of the soul. Yeah. But it may take a few years, friend. But it's worth it. What you are given is unbelievable. One can hardly even begin to say, you are taken. You are taken and taken and taken. And what is fascinating is when you are taken, you are always feminine. The soul is feminine before God. It's one of the great mystical mysteries. When you are taken by God, you are ravished. And you are feminine. The soul is impregnated with his divinity.
And there's a craziness, too.
Oh, Sufis are known for it. Somebody else. At the back. At the very back. Sufis are known for their craziness. But of course, I belong to path of sobriety. There are two Sufi paths, you know. Two Sufi schools, path of sobriety and path of intoxication. I'm path of sobriety. We keep our ecstasy to ourselves.
The 40...
Sorry, can you speak...
In the esoteric tradition that you spoke of, the 40 friends of God...
The Awiliya, yeah.
Do they know who they are?
Yes. When they need to know, they know who they are. Yes, right at the front again. That was a great non-answer, wasn't it? and they need to know.
I have a very basic question about meditation, years of meditation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I will go through weeks and weeks just of grace, months even, where my mind is completely still and everything is vibrantly alive and wonderful. And then without anything, I even try not to notice it so that I won't call it forth, the mind just comes back in really overwhelmingly.
We call it the yo-yo syndrome.
Can you say anything? That's just what it is.
Yeah, it's needed to happen. It has to do with expansion and contraction, the reconciliation of the opposites. Yeah. If there is too much, Sufis have written a lot about this. If there is too much merging, you get lost too far. You have to come back. If there's too much expansion, you have to contract. It's also that Sufis talk about fear and hope. Sometimes you have fear and sometimes you have hope. They are both necessary. They translate later into love and awe. This has to do with the expansion in which you are the beloved and everything is love, and then the contraction in which you bow down as the servant before God. And that is on the highest level. For most of us, it comes in this meditation. You have good times of meditation when the beloved is close, when the mind is still, and then woof, the pendulum starts to swing again, and the mind comes back, and the thoughts comes back, and the doubts comes back. And
you can't do any tricks like going into appreciation when you're not really appreciating the mind, huh?
Why try to trick? We do our bit. He does his bit.